Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to it every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm pretty well, thanks.
Yeah?
I've thought about a way that we could make more money.
How's that?
A New York restaurateur.
Sounded like a straight line if I ever heard one.
Dateline New York, Reuters. A New York restaurateur has cooked up the world's most extravagant pizza, a $1,000 pie topped with six kinds of caviar and fresh lobster.
I want a pizza with caviar and lobster? Do I want that?
I don't. I've never had it, though. Nino Selimaj, who runs six pizza restaurants in the Big Apple on Wednesday, unveiled a luxury pizza, a 12-inch thin crust topped with caviar, lobster, creme fraiche, and chives. Cut into eight, it works out to only $125 a slice. So it's basically $125 a slice. Not that $125 a slice. Yeah, he says, I know this won't be for everyone, but there are people in New York who can afford it, and once tried, they'll be back. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of gimmicks out there. The ring at the bottom of your, $1,000 cocktail or $10,000 cocktail.
It was a gem, actually.
Whatever.
It was a ruby.
Stop it with the stuff that's just so outlandish that nobody wants to eat it.
I got more. If diners are still hungry after luxury pizza, they can always head over to the nearby restaurant Serendipity, which my niece, when she was a little girl, made me visit all the time, which sells a $1,000 ice cream sundae called Golden Opulence.
I say we just roll them all together and eat it together and have a $2,000 sundae pie. How's that?
The Golden Opulence, you may wonder why it costs $1,000, because it's covered in 23-carat edible gold leaf.
All right, edible gold. We got to talk about edible gold one more time, because obviously nobody's listening to what we're saying about edible gold.
Stop eating gold.
Edible gold doesn't really taste like anything, okay? It certainly doesn't taste good. It is shiny, so if you'd like, I'll hold a piece of tinfoil across from you while you eat your sundae.
I'll let you look at my clotter ring. I'll let you look at my clotter ring while you eat your sundae.
Here, look at the shiny thing.
Don't
eat it.
No. Here's what I want to say. Come into the restaurant. It's going to be, it's not bring your own bottle, but it's going to be BYOM. You bring your own money. You bring us a $100 bill. We'll cut it up real small and put it in a salad for you. We'll slice it up table side.
This salad doesn't have enough greens in it. Okay, give me a $100 bill. We'll chop it up.
Stop with
the
new gold.
Green salad. The gold, the gimmicks. Just stop with the gimmicks. I you know what? Let's eat some real food.
Well, the $1,000 pie has probably, $900 worth of ingredients on it. So, I don't know that I want to eat $1,000 worth of caviar on a pie. Maybe it's good. Who knows? But,
maybe.
Maybe. I think
pizza with lobster and caviar. I don't know. You haven't sold me.
I bet. But is it on a thin wafer crust? And is it it may not be
right.
cooked
it could
in
be
a pizza oven.
It could be a glorified blini.
It could right exactly. It could be anything. You don't know.
It could be a giant blini with lobster and creme fraiche.
You don't know, but I'm going to venture a guess that you're never going to find out.
I would say never going to find out.
Come on, we'll get eight guys together, $125 is less.
No, thank you.
It'll be fun.
You're going to get eight. You're going to get seven other guys because I'm out.
Okay, let's talk about...
I have something that I just want to point out, and just the little in the news things. And I know that the New York Times needs to be correct all the time. Okay, I know that people are going to make they're really going to hold the New York Times to be right online, and everything you say must be correct.
Yeah.
Well, I need to read you a little note. Now, we talked last week about Julia Moskin's article about cheap wine and how certain wines should be used for cooking and certain wines shouldn't be for cooking. But somebody wrote a letter to the editor about Julia Moskin's article, Cooking with Cheap Wine. And she spoke of a California Chardonnay so oaky it had tasted up and aged in a box of number two pencils. This was witty but inaccurate. According to Henry Petrosky's book, The Pencil, The History of Design and Circumstance, the standard wood used to make pencils is cedar, not oak. Miss Moskin surely could taste the difference. John T. Durkin.
John T. Durkin needs something to do.
Or Pennsylvania. Please find something to do with your time, John, because I got to tell you something.
Do you want to know something funny?
It was just, she was just trying to make a point. It was a good point. It was funny. I enjoyed it. Maybe go like that when she wrote it.
I got a little small world. Sorry,
you know John T. Durkin?
No, you may not realize that I live in an old pencil factory.
Oh.
I live in the Dixon Mills pencil factory.
Do you have
in
like
City.
Cedar cabinets and things like that, or are they made of oak? Just a scoff at the pencil factory.
I think you're getting a little carried away. I have to say, I think you're getting a little carried away. Well, the pencil factory I live in is very, very nice now. It's an apartment. Let's go on to the next topic.
I'm ready.
We're talking about the food supply. There was a great article written in the New York Times op-ed piece recently about all these the outbreaks we're having in the spinach and the food problems that. Well, you know, it may not be a surprise. Eric points out that cutbacks in the staff and budgets at the FDA have cut from the inspections from 3,400 inspections a year from 35,000 in the 1970s.
That would be fewer.
That would be fewer.
That would be fewer. I can do that. Hold on, math. 3,400, 35,000. 3,400 is less.
We also have a problem with the way that we're set up. I mean, it's set up to fail. First of all, the FDA is these industry regulating bodies are run by the people who work for the who just worked before and will work again immediately after for the industries they're supposed to regulate. And we have them set up almost to fail.
Think that's difficult to do, to regulate the guy who's going to be your boss?
Or who's going to make you the offer or not for the contract? An odd and conflicting set of rules determine which agency has authority. The FDA is responsible for the safety of eggs still in their shells, for example. The Agriculture Department is responsible once the shells are broken.
What if it's like half in and half out?
If a packed ham sandwich has two pieces of bread, the FDA is in charge of inspecting it. If it only has one piece of bread, and agriculture is then in charge.
So I have a question, like, if you have a sandwich and you're about to get inspected by the FDA, do you immediately just take one piece off and say,
you
cannot inspect me, you're out of your jurisdiction. It's like running over the Mexican border if you're on the lam.
Check
same kind of thing.
A sandwich making
you're ignoring me.
I am. A sandwich making factory regulated by the Agriculture Department will be inspected every day, while one inspected by the FDA is going to be inspected every 3 to 5 years. Which do you think you'd rather be?
Well, depends on what I'm doing.
Ready for this? Neither agency under current law has the power to recall contaminated food, with the exception of tainted infant formula. What does that tell you about our society? Save the infants, the rest of us can die. I mean, you know, if you're going to save one group of people, it would be the infants.
We're for the infants,
yes. But who's going to take care of them when we all go? Last year, Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut and Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, both Democrats, introduced an important piece of food safety legislation that tackles the problems. The Safe Food Act would create a single food safety agency with authority to test widely for dangerous pathogens. Doesn't that sound like a good idea? The Safe Food Act deserves strong bipartisan backing. Yeah, I'm all for it. End the nonsense. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Adam Perry Lang has been on our show before. He's the owner of Daisy May's Barbecue, our favorite barbecue place in all of Manhattan on 11th Avenue. And he's also the executive chef at Robert's Steakhouse. He's here to speak to us today about his restaurant overall. We talked last time about barbecue. We're going to be talking more this time about steak.
Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for that amazing compliment.
I'd say we went, for those of you who didn't listen at the time, we took family and friends and we went down to Daisy May's where Adam roasted us off a whole hog, which he'll do for you as long as you give him a credit card deposit, and we just brought this whole pig out, head on, apple in its mouth.
We were at 12 of us.
Oh,
went.
My.
At the time, we brought our own beer. Big fun.
I can't hold on to them anymore. I sell so many of these things now. It's really taken hold, and people really look forward to it. It's very enjoyable. Love it.
How many would you say you sell on a weekend?
On a weekend?
Or during the week?
Every day of the week.
Right.
I'll do anywhere from two to three a day.
We're not going to spend a ton of time talking about Whole Hog today, but just to reiterate, you know, it was such a fun communal experience. 12
it
of us
really
went,
is.
Shared from the same pig, you know, ate with our hands, had some really awesome sides that Adam prepared for us. It was just a lot of fun, and I strongly recommend it for kind of like an outing to bring people together.
Do you have a liquor license yet, or can people still bring their own?
Not yet. Soon. It's killing me, but not yet.
Well, now we're going to shift the discussion a little bit from barbecue. You're also in have the Robert's Steakhouse, where you're the executive chef. And
yep.
What's you got a pretty damn good review in the New York Times recently.
Yeah, I was very proud of that. We all were. We have a really strong team. We were very happy.
And what's one of the things that is surprising about that for a lot of people is that the steakhouse is in the penthouse club, where
yep.
sort of scantily clad women
my
bounce
favorite,
things around.
One of the best headlines of all time, though, Frank Bruni's review. Where only the salad is properly dressed.
Isn't that funny? What a cheeky, funny remark that was. I mean, I was rolling on the floor on that one. It was hysterical.
Well, now, talk to us about how you wind up being executive chef of a one-star, you got to be the only one-star steakhouse in a strip club, basically.
And first of all, it's an honor just to be recognized within that venue and for Frank Bruni to be as bold to go in there and review it. You know, despite some criticism of, hey, how could you do a steakhouse? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he said it. Look, you know, you can find great food in the strangest of places.
Absolutely.
And from the day we opened, we just had such a commitment towards buying the best, as well as developing a dry aging process, which we pride ourselves in, and really just making an impact. And so he recognized it. I got into it because... it was a job that I could simultaneously do while I was doing Daisy Mays, and my partner was who owns the club. He asked me what I thought, my thoughts about the restaurant, and my thoughts turned into a reality.
Now let me ask you. The guy says, "All right, I've got the penthouse club where scantily clad women will be giving lap dances and neck rubs." Who comes to the
That's
restaurant?
That's not your neck.
Is who comes? Who comes to the restaurant?
You wouldn't believe the diversity. I think that there's an element. First of all, it's a classy place, and just the cross section of people there, section of very diverse, and people really come down there and loosen their ties and just really take it easy, and it's really just it's a fun environment.
I'm sorry, you just said people come there and loosen their ties.
I know, I was waiting for you to jump in. I was waiting for you to jump in. You didn't take it, so I just moved on.
I tried to hold back. I want you to know,
yeah.
Adam, I tried to bite my tongue. I held it as long as I could.
Now,
I'm sorry.
Is it a co-ed crowd that comes there?
Yeah, but I would say it's maybe about 75% male, as you can imagine, 80% male, and then 20% female. But you know, it's amazing. The women are just going there and having fun, and they even host striptease lessons for private bachelorette parties, and it's just kind of a fun venue.
You know, there are so many jokes that I could have made. But,
I know.
But no. What I'm saying is there's so many jokes I could have made about that, but any one of them would have gotten Mark in trouble with his wife and me in trouble with my girlfriend, so we're gonna leave those alone. Now, are people really paying attention to the food in this sort of a venue?
Well, yes and no. I think that, like in any place you go for a restaurant, you know, you can have the greatest food in the world, but if you're fighting with the person across from you, you don't taste the thing. And similarly so, if you're just there to look at the girl.
If you're tasting the person across from you, then you
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, you know, if you it depends. Bottom line is that the food is unbelievable. That's the bottom line. That someone, they might not even taste their steak. They're just occupied
with the lap dance.
Their friends. Yeah.
With the lap dance
they're getting
them. Well, I want to talk to you about those steaks because all kidding aside, you make some serious stuff there and you do things differently than a lot of steakhouses in New York. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back and talk more with Adam Perry Lang, executive chef at Robert's Steakhouse. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil.
No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella on antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're talking today with Adam Perry Lang, owner and chef at Daisy Mae's Barbecue, but also executive chef at Robert's Steakhouse, which is oddly located in the Penthouse Club in New York. Now, you're making some serious steak there. You insist on having your own dry aging room, right?
Absolutely.
Talk to us about dry aging a steak, why it's important, and why it's important that you have your own dry aging room.
Well, you know, I'll say it's important only insofar as if you want that flavor. You can actually get a tender steak doing wet aging, but you just won't have that muskiness and that kind of that New York steakhouse-style steak. So
I think wet aging is just a misnomer, Adam. I think wet aging is really just a way to get a soft steak with no flavor.
But I'll tell you, you know, But there are people really that in other parts of the country, as I've learned, that just really do not like the flavor of dry age, and they need that cleaner, juicier flavor. Dry age tends to be, you know, it's apples and oranges here. It's comparing a grape to a raisin. So,
Why don't you tell people how dry aging is, how you dry age a steak?
Okay, there's three considerations with dry aging that if you're to do it, that are important. First of all, you have to make a commitment to the environment that you're dry aging it in. Okay, you can't have different flavors inside the box because meat will absorb like a sponge the flavor.
Right, it's not your cheese room and your steak room. Can't be both.
Oh God, no. You have to make a commitment to it, and you kind of like create an age in the room, a culture in the room that will give your steaks that distinctive flavor, and that's what one of the reasons we pride ourselves. There's three things: is air velocity, temperature, and what was that third one? And humidity. That really impact why a dry age would be. You want a dry age, believe it or not, a very high humidity, at least how I see it, because if you go too dry in that environment, the meat will raisinate too early on in the process, and you won't really take advantage of that absorption.
Let me give a basic primer for some of the folks who are listening about what dry aging is as opposed to wet aging. When you age a steak, it gets softer and more tender, but you can age it in a sealed environment, in a cryovac environment, and you won't lose any mass. Dry aging is an ancient way of aging steaks that's typical to New York steakhouses, but also practiced around the world, where they actually hang a large piece of meat in a room unwrapped and uncovered, and that forms sort of a crust on the outside of it, and it begins to dry out, and you lose some mass because that crust that forms on the outside of the steak protects it, but it's not an airtight seal, so you lose a little bit of meat with each passing day, and it's quite costly, isn't it?
It's all relative. You lose on average anywhere from 17 to 19% of your product in a dry age environment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not it's costly is always relative to the person paying.
Right.
It's expensive, definitely, but it's a sacrifice of flavor.
Hey, when we come back after the news, we're going to talk with Adam Perry Lang a little bit more about how exactly you, when people say it's a dry age steak, what that means, and whether to decide if you like dry aging or not, and maybe how you can go to Robert's Steakhouse and check one out. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
We're talking with Adam Perry Lang. He is chef and owner of Daisy May's Barbecue in New York City, and he's also the executive chef of Robert's Steakhouse in New York City, known for dry aging steaks. We're talking about dry aging before. The process is basically to hang steaks uncovered and let them hang in a room and dry over time. And it winds up costing about 20% of the product, so dry aging will always be a little more expensive. What are the things? It sounds kind of odd to Americans that we would hang for 21, 28 days a raw piece of meat left hanging in a room. You know, we think of everything has to be fresh in order to be clean. Talk to us about what happens during the dry aging process.
Okay, well, as beef ages, you can't really do this with too many other things. Wild game you can do, but it has a natural enzyme in it that actually breaks down the product and makes it more tender. It's also the other factor why it's a little bit more tender is because the meat itself, after slaughter, is coming out of rigor, which is rigor mortis, and it's starting to stretch. The flavor is impacted also in terms of the environment, and there's a culture that forms in the room. It's kind of like what's like wine, a friendly rot, so to speak, and this penetrates into the meat, and it gives it a nutty, truffle-like aroma. So when you go a little bit far, it, even in a good way, blue cheese or like kind of foie gras, it's hard to kind of imagine while explaining it, but that's really what comes.
But is there a danger with dry aging meat, or how careful do you have to be? What can go wrong? I mean, can the beast all turn rancid? Can it go bad? I mean, that's what people are afraid of, I think, when we talk about dry aged steak.
Well, I wouldn't recommend doing it at home. That's the first thing. You really have to make a commitment to it. You have to know what you're doing. That's the bottom line. You know, if you just did it in a fridge, like you think, and you opening and close, you don't realize how much humidity and temperature fluctuation you might do. So I don't agree with doing it at home. But in terms of dangers, you know, if you like anything, if you respect the basic principles of it, you can do it quite successfully. I've actually dry aged a piece of meat out 50 weeks and lived, and it was interesting. You know, in terms of tasting it, you know, I've never heard of anybody doing it, and it was kind of like I did it with Jeffrey Steingarten. We're like looking at each other, are we going to die? But you know, we realized that after a certain point, there's only so much flavor that you get, no matter how far out you go. And
so what's the longest?
Red inside.
What's the longest you would recommend dry aging?
I look at it like a wine cabinet. If you buy a case of wine and you say, hey, it's going to be good in 93, and you start tasting it in 91, you say, ah, it's not there yet. You take another bottle in 92, 93, ah, let's let it for another year. You know, so I don't agree with the concept of, oh, 3 weeks, that's it, take it out. I mean, I don't think it's that hands-free. I think that there is an element here. I've had some dry-aged steaks that have more flavor at 4 or 5 weeks than some 8, 9-week steaks. So I keep an element of artisanship to it.
Now, are there a lot of parallels between dry-aging steak and making steak and barbecuing, which is a very different kind of cooking, at which you're also pretty expert?
Well, barbecuing, and I really refuse to completely take the term barbecue as only being southern indirect barbecue. I think that in the Northeast we've lived long enough to call a grill a barbecue, so let's call barbecue what Northeasterners know as a barbecue for this conversation. So for dry-aged product, though, in the southern sense, in terms of cooking over a long period of time, with a dry-aged product, it tends to get very livery. Dry-aged product needs to be charred pretty aggressively, and people say, wow, that almost looks burnt. But the fact of the matter is, because of the deepness and the gaminess of the flavor of the meat, the actual char of the meat, almost the carbonization of the meat, cuts into that fat and actually is a very, very pleasant, it's a saliva-inducing experience.
Well, I also
and people don't realize that. I don't agree with the dry-aged steaks cooked in the normal sense of just a nice char caramelized thing. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also love the textural counterpoint as well.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and do you think that you need, when a steak is dry-aged that long, you pretty much need to eat it rare, right? Or it's sort of dried out?
It's not dried out. I mean, it's still a very relatively juicy steak. However, as you cook it further, I reckon medium rare is really the way I like to eat it, and I don't tend to really gnaw on the bone because, you know, it's been there for a while. That you know, the bone is the first place where it kind of can go a little bit bad. But you can. It's not unsafe, so to speak, but it's too strong in flavor for me.
Now,
but as you cook it longer and longer, it gets like a more livery taste, and it's not that nice.
So now when people come into the dining room at Robert's Steakhouse, it's you've got sort of scantily clad women dancing around, you've got great service, you've got good wine, you've got great steaks. Are you catching any flack from other professionals in the business who you know, it's only
my best customers?
I'm sorry. Well, I'm not giving you any flack. No, but I mean, I think that there's
no,
a lot.
No, I'm just saying that it's just kind of like other guys in the business. I mean, chefs in general are the first ones just to go where good food is. And I'm not saying from the point of view, it's like, hey, this is the best. Look, I just happen to be very, very privileged to be able to buy the best and to be disciplined enough to buy the hanging beef and to do what I do to it. So like in Kansas City, get great barbecue in a gas station. So, you know.
Well, let's take this conversation a little bit farther. Does a place like Hawaiian Tropic, do they take your concept here and take it too far?
I haven't eaten there yet. I've heard good things. Can you be specific?
Well, just it's more about the show than it is about the food.
I know David Burke, and I don't think that he's ever done anything, and this is just my opinion, I don't think he's ever done anything in terms of with respect to show in sacrifice of flavor. Granted, you know, he's a different style than me, but that being said, I think that David and where he comes from, you know, he's a flavor-first guy, but he does tend to push the buck in terms of having novelty, but still, I don't think it's at a sacrifice of flavor.
Okay. I have another question for you now.
Sure.
Just something I want to bring up. Now, in the Times, you got this great review, okay?
Yeah.
And frankly, in reading the review, I was kind of shocked that it was only one star. It seemed like as you read through the review that it was going to be a two-star review, because it was that complimentary of the food.
Right.
And just a couple of weeks before that, Frank Bruni writes a review about the Kobe Club, another place featuring steak, a Jeffrey Chatero restaurant, and gives it no stars and kind of bashes that particular restaurant to which Chatero then responds with a full page ad in the New York Times. I would imagine that seeing your restaurant get one star within a week or two after that had to really burn him.
Well, if it burns him, I mean, I know him personally. I think he's a great guy, and he's a super restaurateur. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that place, particularly from my opinion, is excellent. But let's just get back to the reviewing system real quickly. And
sure.
I'll keep it brief. It's, you know, we've drifted from the Times reviews in a good way, I think. It's not really a food review. It's a restaurant review, which means it kind of is a cohesive balance of all the elements of a restaurant. And while I felt that, you know, I don't think I could have gotten a better food review, and I'm grateful for it, I think that, you know, there's other elements inside of the club that don't lend in our club, that doesn't lend itself to being a three-star, two-star restaurant, just by nature of the fact that it's not about the food first. It's a complement to the entertainment. So I think it was a very fair review, and as a chef, I couldn't be more proud than getting one star and not even looking at the stars, reading the content.
Reading the text.
Really, I was so flattered, and I can't tell you. I couldn't contain myself.
Well, Adam, I need to tell you in closing that I'm very disappointed in you for working at such a joint as this with scantily clad women dancing around. And if I need reservations, I email you directly.
We'll see you in about a week.
I'm usually gone by around 6 o'clock anyway, but Chef Jason's over there is manning the fort, and he's making it happen with the rest of the guys.
Well,
I have to give props to Chef Jason, for sure.
I want you to know that if I go, and when I go, I will only be going for the steaks to try your food and to look at the moral depravity to which you have fallen. That's the only reason that I'll be there. I'm not even going to look beyond the table.
You know what? We actually, don't worry, we actually have blindfolds. for people like yourself, and we'll be happy to put a note next to your name.
That is very, very thoughtful, Adam.
Very thoughtful,
we do appreciate
Adam.
It.
I'm very disappointed. I'll see you soon. That's Adam Perry Lang.
Okay,
he's at Days Maze Barbecue in New York City. You can go to our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and find out all about it. And he's also the executive chef at Robert's Steakhouse inside the Penthouse Club in New York City. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:44.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Today, you left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We were talking about barbecue, steaks, and strip clubs.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Yeah, I think that I've been to...
Let's write a song.
I've actually been to more barbecue places
when
that were strip clubs.
When the waiter bites.
Oh,
and
my.
No, I'm sorry, God.
That's awful. That's truly, truly awful. Were you aware the microphone was on when you were saying that? So, yeah, that's a new thing. David Burke has the Hawaiian Tropic Zone,
mm-hmm.
where women in bikinis serve you dinner. And Adam Perry Lang is doing great steak work in the Penthouse Club, where you can get a back rub for $50 or a lap dance for whatever they charge.
Is the answer that no matter what we're doing, we want to be able to have really, really good food? Is that the question?
That wasn't where I thought you were going with that. that was the opposite way.
That's because I'm such a wise guy. You just figured I was going
someplace. Is the answer that wherever we're going, and I was going to say, oh, yeah, that's the answer. but the question is, should we? You know what I mean? I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, aren't there just sometimes you should be eating greasy chicken wings and...
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know what? I don't know. You know, the funny thing is Mark and I have a lot of experience with steakhouses. Although we don't own a steakhouse, we belong to a lunch club for years.
The irony is I'm more likely to go to Robert's because it has great steaks than I am because it's a strip club.
Actually, the irony is also, and I know you well, Mark, you're less likely to go to Robert's because it's a strip club. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that we love Adam Perry Lang's food so much that you would go without thinking mm-hmm. about it if it weren't a strip club, but it would have to be a certain night, like the night when your wife wasn't coming.
Actually, the best thing that probably could happen to me is to go while my wife was there, yeah. So I didn't get into any trouble.
Yeah, I would take your wife too. They say it's 25% of the clientele mm-hmm. is women, so you know, that's sort of I don't know, maybe the advent of Sex in the City, we have a liberated view steak and strip clubs.
Everybody I talk to who's been to the place says the place is fun,
yeah.
Says the place is entertaining, says the food is great, says, you know, no matter what reason you're going for, that it's a fun place to
go.
Well,
I can't.
And the steaks are spectacular. I mean, I've heard from a few people that their favorite steaks in Manhattan are at Robert's.
I can't believe that. I think it's a moral outrage, and I've got to go see it for myself. I'm like those congressmen that reviewed all that pornography to pronounce that it was dirty. Of course it was dirty. You saw the title of it. You didn't need to look at the whole thing. Yeah, anyway, but we belong to an eating club, for lack of a better word, called the Red Meat Club.
I think it should reconvene at Roberts.
It met on the
sure.
It met on the second Monday of, the feminist members of the Red Meat Club. I don't know if you're recalling.
I remember some of them.
Oh, yeah.
It would be an outrage.
Yeah, you'd be dead, and that's not happening. Well, no, but the Red Meat Club met for 10 years on the second Monday of every month for lunch, and our idea was that only restaurateurs and chefs are off on Monday for lunch, and we would go to the very – and none of us owned a steakhouse or worked in a steakhouse, and so it was really great. We went to places that weren't as relevant to what we all did for a living, and the differences in steak are absolutely, absolutely tremendous, and it's the source of meat. It's the aging of the meat. I've had a real respect for dry aging, and
Well, I think that – what sometimes people think, well, a steak's a steak's a steak, and it totally is not. And having been to as many of the red meat clubs and as many of the steakhouses that there are in New York City, how different the steaks are at one place or another. And some are tamer than others, and some have a, you know, that you really taste that dry aging that Adam was talking about, where you take a steak out, you know, 8 or 9 weeks to its, you know, to where it, the most flavor is imparted on the steak as possibly could be. And again, one of the things he said was, that's a really, you get out that far, that's a really gamey flavor. It can be a little livery and gamey, and that's not for everybody.
And you get out that far, and you'll lose more than 30% of the steak, you know, and that increases the price by that amount. You know, the other thing that's funny is, when you get into the high-end market, especially veal chops and meat like that and great steaks, there are steaks and there are steaks. I mean, and it's interesting, yeah, Arthur's Steakhouse gives you a great deal on a steak, but you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny, if you look at, let's take the veal chop market. You know,
right.
If I want to buy veal chops or buy things that I can break down into veal chops, right? It can cost me, I can find a veal chop for $12.
Right.
Wholesale, my cost.
Mm-hmm.
I can find the best veal chop might cost me $45.
Right.
It costs the restaurant.
Yeah, if you want to buy nature veal, and by nature veal, that's a specific, it refers to the way the animal is raised, and that the animal is raised only on its mother's milk. And
there's also the breed of the animal.
Correct. There's a whole slew of things that fall into nature veal. And that type of veal is just simply going to be more expensive. Personally, I think it's more flavorful. I like the idea of the way the animal was treated before it was slaughtered.
But also,
it's to me, it makes for a much better product.
But I think that people may not realize that, you know, people say, well, I went to this restaurant and they were charging, you know, $25 for a steak. I went to that restaurant, it was $90 or $100.
Right.
That is often, not always, but it's often the reflective of what the restaurant is paying for the steak. If you want to source your steak, went to Wolfgang's Steakhouse in New York. Wolfgang's, very interesting story. It's built in what I understand is an old private subway station that was owned by the Vanderbilts on Park Avenue.
Yeah.
Beautiful tile ceilings.
Really pretty, really pretty place. A little bit loud, but really pretty.
And this the owner was Wolfgang was a waiter at Peter Luger's for many years, and he put a couple of kids through college and grad school, three kids through college and grad school, working as a waiter, and then some of them were very successful, and they opened Wolfgang,
that's beautiful,
his restaurant.
They opened a restaurant for their day. After he put them through college as a waiter in Peter Luger's, they opened this restaurant for him and kind of gave him his own restaurant.
And I have to say, honestly, the vibe of the place is a very busy steakhouse, a very packed-in, tight-in steakhouse. Not my favorite scene, but the meat was spectacular and the service was great.
Yeah, especially the ribeye. The bone-in ribeye was the steak of the night, I think.
Yeah, I'll put a link up to Wolfgang's at our restaurant. It's a beautiful dining room. I'd sort of recommend going there for a late lunch rather than dinner.
Just yeah, probably.
I like to avoid the bustle. Very kind of stockbrokery, kind of busy young stockbroker with her.
Yeah, we were tucked in there pretty tight.
Yeah, well, you know, but the meal was fantastic. We'll put up maybe a list. Maybe we can put up a list of our favorite steakhouses.
The slab Canadian bacon was one of the best things at the whole place.
All right, I'm getting hungry. Let's go to a commercial. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Hi.
Hey, Francis.
We're talking about steak. We're talking about barbecue. We're talking about nothing that's going to get you skinnier. Did you see that the Washington Post has reported that a biologist named Bruce Bloomberg has come out with a new chemical called an obesogen? And it is the obesogens that lead to obesity.
I must have them.
The science is new, but several chemicals commonly found in pesticides as well as food and beverage containers caused lab mice to develop more and bigger fat cells as well as packing on more abdominal fat, especially when exposed to the chemicals during early development. The chemicals in question have been conclusively linked to abnormal sexual development. And these findings were presented at the American Association of the Advancement of Sciences.
Scary stuff.
Meeting. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Well, what's a health-conscious consumer to do? Skip the pesticides. But I don't eat pesticides.
Sure you do.
That's
eat
the
them
problem.
All the time, every day.
So there's
all of us do. They're in just about every single food that
they're not
that
an organic
is out
food.
There.
They're not an organic food.
Yeah,
and
but you know what? They're in the water runoff now. I mean, we're finding chemicals in places we never dreamed that chemicals would end
yeah.
up.
Yeah, that's true. I got nothing to say. No, but I mean, you can do the best that you can. You know, I mean, and you try and buy locally whenever possible. You ask about where your food is coming from.
Yeah, but like I said, the best that you can. These things are so prevalent that they're leaching into even the areas where we expect them not to be. Even in certain rivers where you expect them not to be, in your oceans, in the dirt where. You know, places have never been touched by these things. We're finding certain chemicals. It's crazy.
So what do you suggest?
I say we stop using them.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen anytime soon. And, we're working on this show all the time. It's trying to get people to stop using them. But what you can do to limit your intake on this stuff is, you know, when you have processed food in sealed cans, containers, things like that, you're putting yourself at, I don't want to say you're putting yourself at greater risk, but you're making a choice that may have consequences. You know, buying from your family farm, buying organic and buying local and knowing where your food comes from make a big difference in the world, but I guess that's what we're all about.
You gotta be tired of hearing us say that, huh?
Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.